But guess what? There are people around the world, and I do mean around the world. Sometimes we get a little isolated when we talk about our show. Sometimes we go all the way to just the local Florida area when we talk about stuff. But you know what? There's a worldwide awakening going on. And for it to be worldwide, that means people have to be contributing from other spots. And we are lucky enough, and I've been trying to get him on the show for about a year or so. James Corbett, can you hear us okay, James?
I can hear you loud and clear from halfway across the world. And if only I'd known you were looking for me, I would have been happy to be on.
Well, you know, I needed to establish my show for a while and build our long guests. We've, you know, I know you work with Sybil Edmonds. We had her on many months ago talking about her, you know, FBI involvement in 9/11 and everything else. And I'm going to say right off, I'm a big fan of what you do because, and I said this at the opening part of the show, you're not just someone who's a broadcaster. You are an investigator. You actually do your own research, and you and a bunch of others have decided to put it on everything from short form videos. Your 9/11 video just cracks me up every time I watch it. To what you just did in Lampoor with a 25-minute presentation about the Pentagon and Cheney and Rumsfeld and just their actions alone, their documented actions alone are criminal. I'm a fan, bro. I'm a fan of what you do. I'm a fan of how you do it. And, you know, I've been doing radio a long time. Real quick on me, 2004, saw Building 7 video, started talking about it on Clear Channel Radio. It didn't go over real well. Ended up getting out of that company, doing some sports radio for a couple of years, and I landed this show about a year and a half ago, and it was always about think for yourself, never mind. You know, we got enough people telling you the truth on mainstream media. And, you know, little by little, through the attrition of, you know, watching this video and finding this person, I found you probably about a year and a half ago. You've been doing it a while, though. How long have you been doing it, James?
Well, this is actually going to be the sixth year of the website. So I've been researching this for just a little over 6.5 years. I started the website about almost 6 years ago now. So getting up there for now. But I come at it from a completely different perspective than you. I wasn't involved in broadcasting at all. I never even planned on starting a website, never dreamt I would be doing anything like this. But when I started to encounter this information, specifically about 9/11 and central banking and all of this kind of stuff, and I fell down that rabbit hole, and there was just no question I had to do something to get the word out. And so I started the website, and it's been quite an amazing journey for me personally over the last 6 years, and I think I've grown quite a bit. So I appreciate your kind words about the site.
Red pill moment. What was your red pill moment?
It's hard to indicate just one. I think it was a series of things, but as I've told my audience a few times, basically I moved into a new apartment here in Japan, and the apartment came with an internet connection. So for the first time in years, I had internet in my home, and suddenly there were all these things that I had been unconnected from and I didn't know had sprung up in the meantime, like Google Video and YouTube and podcasting even was kind of a relatively new phenomenon for me. So when I started getting online and starting as I was a curious, politically curious, and wanted to be up to date with what was going on. And so I started finding all this information about 9/11, and I thought, well, this is interesting. This is compelling. I can even independently verify a lot of this information that I'd never heard of before, but I just couldn't bring myself to believe that anything like this could happen. How could everything I've been told be so wrong? How could this be covered up? And then when I started to find out about the central banking fraud and then some of the other frauds and Bilderberg and things like this, I started to realize, oh, this is part of a much, much, much bigger whole. And suddenly things that I'd known for you know, decades were suddenly coming into perspective. And you know, the JFK assassination, which everyone knows was not done by a single lone nut, suddenly you start to understand how things like that fit into a bigger puzzle. And when those pieces started to come into place, that was when really it just clicked. And I started to realize, well, I don't know what I can do, but I have to do something to get involved in this, and no better time than now, especially with all of the technology we have at our fingertips right now. So I literally started the website on a rusty old laptop that was on its last legs, and I ran the entire website off of that for a few years. So it just goes to show you don't need a lot of money to get into this, and you don't need a lot of talent or experience, because I didn't have any of those. But you just keep at it, and eventually you can start to teach yourself how to do this. And that's
Everybody, see, this is what I love about what's happening, and we're going to talk about the two different versions of alternative media. You did a great interview with, and we, guys, do we love Abby Martin or is it just me?
Oh, we love her a lot.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. We have had, and she, he was on with Abby on RT America not too long ago. But did you watch like an Aaron Russo video? You know, you mentioned the Fed, you mentioned fractionary banking. Give me, you know, it's always neat to go back and continually reference some of the original seeds, you know, Loose Change. We have Jason Burmese on here every Wednesday night. And, you know, there's some of these original seeds that were planted by a guy who decided to look into this topic or that topic. So, you know, you kind of glanced over it. We got plenty of time here. Was it freedom for fascism? Was it, you know, what were some of the early things that kind of made you tip your head sideways and do the old Scooby-Doo, you know, like that? What was that?
Absolutely. Freedom to Fascism was one of those documentaries that really hit me at the time. It was really well done. It was to the point. It was entertaining as well as interesting, and it hit a lot of that information. But I think the first one that really got me was The Money Masters, and that was the one that really started me thinking about this, and it was...
That's like a college course. That thing's like 3.5 hours
exactly.
Long.
And I appreciated that because, again, with the internet, you can get all of this information that isn't dumbed down. You can find stuff that doesn't talk down to you like you're a child and try to explain things with flashy graphics or whatever. You can actually get serious intellectually stimulating information that you can then go and start researching for yourself. That appeals to me. And that's really what started to hook me into this when I started to find good verifiable sources of information like that, that were really kind of like college courses in reality, as opposed to the stuff you actually learn in college.
James, we'll go to all the way the other side of the pendulum, and we'll talk about a cartoon that I tweet a lot called The American Dream. Have you seen that?
I have. As I recall, that came out a couple of years ago.
Yes. Yeah, it was a couple of guys that put together a little 30-minute South Park kind of thing. It goofed on everything from Back to the Future to, I think it was the movie 300. And it kind of, again, rather than a 3.5-hour documentary about Federal Reserve and fractionary banking and going all the way back to people that invented banking over 1,000 years ago and how the system works and how money that's not based on any gold or anything is simply debt and debt is money and you can absorb that, but not all of us are going to be that quick. You know, some sponges are bigger than others, and there's nothing wrong with a nice little 30-minute cartoon that kind of takes you down the same rabbit hole, the condensed version. This is why you talked about not having talent. And first of all, you are a communicator. I do it for a living, so I know you, if you bored the shit out of me, James, I wouldn't be talking to you. You know, I'd say, you know, this guy, good people take difficult ideas or concepts and can explain them. I think it was Einstein that said it. You know, if you really know a topic, it'll be very easy for you to explain it to the common man. And I'm paraphrasing, but you have that same ability. And it's because you know your topic. You don't just skate over it. You're willing to look into it and everything else. So now that I'm done kissing your ass, let's start talking about some other stuff here. You know, 9/11.
Well, can I just touch on that point that you brought up with the cartoon, et cetera?
Sure.
And I fully agree that anything that gets people thinking along these lines is great. So my philosophy of media is whatever floats someone's boat and gets them thinking along different lines, that's fine. So I know there's a lot of different people out there with a lot of different tastes, and that's why my media and the way I do things won't appeal to everyone, and I don't expect it to, just as certain other types of media don't appeal to me. But that doesn't mean that media is worthless or that there's any need for everyone to do things in the same way. I think it's the exact opposite. What we're fighting is centralized power and authority, so we have to be decentralized, and everyone brings different things to the table, and that's why, you know, each person listening out there probably has their own skill, their own method, their own style that'll appeal to different people out there that I wouldn't be able to reach or you wouldn't be able to reach. So I really think that it's a new phenomenon we're facing here with the rise of these technologies that make everybody a part of this conversation, which is just such an empowering thing and one of the most hopeful signs of the times that we're living in.
Yeah, it's spreading. We'll talk about you being affiliated with Gary Franchi in a little while, but let's go back to something you talked to Abby Martin about. And, you know, I'd never really thought of it. It's kind of funny. It happened around me little by little. You know, I used to go to What Really Happened or some of the really early websites. And you know, I found myself saying, well, geez, this one doesn't have any problems at all questioning 9/11. This one is starting. And, you know, lo and behold, those were the ones that were starting to get funneled some money. And even though it's all internet media and all considered alternative media, there is a big difference. There's really two kinds of media. And I want you to tell my listeners about that, because I think you did a great job of describing the difference.
Right. So we usually think of things in terms of the establishment media versus the alternative media, the mainstream, the talking heads that we all know and see on the TV every day versus the internet, the alternative media. And that's generally the way that we break it down. But I think it goes even further than that, because as you say, even within the alternative media, there's the establishment alternative and the alternative alternative. So the establishment alternative, as you say it, I think it, a lot of it comes down to funding, where people are getting money, who's sitting on the boards of these different websites and media entities. And when you start to break it down, you start to notice that there are certain topics where certain alternative media websites and shows will just won't go to, or if they go, they'll only go to disparage it. So usually along the lines of something like 9/11 Truth, but even a lot of the so-called anti-war left type alternative sites that did such great work trying to expose what was going on under Bush, of course, now that Obama's in power, they're happy to shut up and toe the line. So we see a lot of this rah-rah humanitarian intervention, let's drop the love bombs on Libya type of stuff coming from some of the outlets that you would have thought would have been anti-war. And yeah. I think the way to explain that is that ultimately, the establishment knows that as the internet rises and as people see through the ridiculous propaganda that's on the mainstream, people are going to be turning to the alternative. And that's why I think there's been an investment, especially in recent years, into some of these sites, and specifically for the purpose of directing that conversation. So that's not to say by any means that the establishment alternative media is completely useless. I think they do a lot of good work on certain topics. It's just certain topics they won't go into, and they won't.
They don't connect the dots. Right? You know, it's kind of funny. If you can take, and you know, like almost every 9/11 documentary went out and found all the video, everybody from people laying in hospital beds describing explosions to firemen ducking. You know, if they actually took all the information that was out there and suddenly connected the dots, then they do what an actual investigative journalist would do. But they basically put their little 2-minute piece out there and go home. I'm not saying they're all evil. I'm not saying they're all on the take. I just think they're all realize the role, and they don't rock the boat. Do you agree?
I agree completely. I don't think that there are a lot of people who are fully consciously selling out and are the people who are lying through their teeth. I think these are people who have just bought into the system and are, as you say, not willing to rock that boat. And I think that basically a lot of people will go along to get along. And as the system gets more and more outrageous, people find that they have to go along at least a certain extent if they want to maintain whatever it is they think they're maintaining in terms of their status in this status quo. So absolutely, we start to see people who will just start to self-censor, whether that's deliberate or whether that's just something that they don't want to go there mentally. But we see that more and more. And again, as just the propaganda gets more outrageous, unfortunately, it draws along some of those people who should be vociferously against this presidential kill list and the drones and all of this craziness. People are just sort of sublimating that. And the ridiculous thing is that it's so obvious that if Romney had have won the election, suddenly all of these left alternative sites would have been once again doing their job, and the right alternative sites would have gone back to maintaining the status quo. So it's just such a charade that at this point, I mean, who can really buy into that with any intellectual integrity?
James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. That's not the only place you can find him. Gary Franchi picked him up. I know you've been working with Sibel Edmonds at Boiling Frogs. Tell me a little bit about, because I want to get to Lampoor. I want to get to a lot of things you've done. And Sibel was just a gem to have on the air. Her energy and the fight she has that she has gone through for over a decade now. And the reason I want to bring her up is you just mentioned the difference between the ones that, you know, the so-called alternative media that are funded by a Rockefeller Foundation. And then there's people like you and me doing it, you know, finding our own way to try to search for truth, not necessarily tell you what truth is. And Sibel's done that with Boiling Frogs, but you're a contributor. Some of your stuff ends up over there. So tell people, first of all, how you guys met and everything, and then where we can find your stuff there.
Well, Sibel, actually, I got in touch with her originally to do an interview just talking about her experiences, her whistleblowing experiences. So that was how we initially got in contact. But then I think it was maybe a year later or even more, she was online and she had seen one of my videos and been impressed by it. And at that time, she was looking for a video producer for her website, boilingfrogspost.com. So she just got in touch with me and we started out that way. And before you know it, I was producing videos for her website. So I produce a video every Tuesday called The Eye Opener. And we've been doing that for, I guess it's going on for a year and a half now. So quite a few reports under the belt. And basically a 10, 15 minute, sometimes even 20 minute mini documentary on a set topic each week. But I just want to say absolutely, Sibel is absolutely the real deal. And she really is feisty and she's not afraid to really, she doesn't pull her punches, let's put it that way. And she has called out the establishment alternative time and time and time and time again on her website and through her work as a whistleblower, calling out the phony whistleblower organizations that will, again, take this foundation money to basically shut up on certain issues and go along and give Obama a transparency award, as some of these groups did a few years ago. And just, it's just ridiculous again. And Sibel has been just at the forefront of calling out some of these sites by name, talking about antiwar.com, The Real News, talking about Ray McGovern even, and saying that he's basically sold out because of his support for Obama, calling out Seymour Hirsch and all of these other people by name. So she's just absolutely fearless. So I hope Ray people McGovern are checking out Boiling Frogs Post.
Yeah, Ray McGovern's someone I, you know, CIA, former CIA guy, very much talking false flags and really, you know, doing a great job of adding to the 9/11 conversation. Real quick, before we get to your 9/11 video, Boiling Frogs does not take money. And people would say, well, why not take a few bucks here and there to, you know, so you don't have to sweat out, you know. But in comes things like, and I want you to explain it real quick, like board of directors, you know, it's like a noose that's not necessarily tied around your neck yet, but it suddenly shows up, huh?
Exactly right. And Sibel does a good job of explaining this when she started her National Security Whistleblowers Coalition, which was just basically a grouping of some of these intelligence and national security whistleblowers, FBI, NSA, some of the other agencies there in the alphabet soup world, who came together in 2004, 2005 to talk about some of the things that were going on, especially then with the rising Bush tyranny. And so she got a lot of people under that umbrella, and she had a pretty impressive list of people there. And of course, then she started to get courted by these various foundations. And of course, the offers of money always came with these strings. Well, you just establish a board, and we'll appoint a couple of people to that board, and that the board will direct what happens with the coalition. And so basically, she just at one point said, oh, well, I understand what's happening here, and I've seen it happen with a lot of other organizations, so I'm not going to take that money. And of course, then all the funding dries up, and of course, all the attention dries up as well. So Sibel was something of an establishment alternative darling for a while there, but she's now pretty much persona non grata on a lot of those types of sites because, again, she doesn't play ball. She's not willing to go along with it and give Obama transparency awards and all of this type of you know, feel-good, pat the Democrats on the back. It's all the those evil Republican type of things that go with a lot of this foundation funding. So again, it does come with so many strings attached that even if it seems like a good thing at first and, oh, I can do so much good with this money, of course, it's always a question, oh, what are these boards of directors going to do?
Well, that's how, you know, they're like if you're into sci-fi, and I'm not, but I know the difference. I know what Borg are. And, you know, I remember watching Patrick Stewart and Number Five, and I was like, what are the Borg? And they go, well, the Borg can't beat you. They assimilate you. They always find a way to buy into you or, you know, fund you or do anything else. James, I remember watching your 9/11 video not much longer after it came out, this early on. I think I was either following your YouTube page or I'm not sure, but I remember seeing it, and it was what? It's not even five. It's about what? 5 minutes long? It's not. It's
just under 5 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, I know that story front and back, and, you know, I was one of the early guys to really question it. And, you know, I own movies like 9/11 In Plain Sight and some of the original documentaries that were out there asking questions. I hold on to them for posterity to remind me that it started off with a few people, you know, La Pentagate. Google that, by the way. was a guy named Terry Masson, who actually in France looked at the original pictures of the Pentagon and went, what? Huh? Where's 80 tons of plane wreckage? What, you know, this is what aircraft look like when they disintegrate on impact. This is, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was like looking at pictures and you just, your mind wanted to say everything's fine, but you would look and go, something's wrong. And so I know the story. I've researched it and seen a bazillion documentaries, but you found a way in 5 minutes to take the word conspiracy theory and throw it back at them. In other words, demonstrate the idiocy of their official conspiracy theory by putting together a 5-minute documentary. Now, did you know you were this kind of funny dude? Because you're pretty dry and funny in this.
I have a sense of humor. I don't think that comes through in a lot of my my work on the website, but I don't think people who know me would be particularly surprised.
So if I have a few beers with you and we get like shit-faced and stuff, you'll start doing fart jokes?
It has been known to occur in the past.
Ah, all right. See, this is what I like. All right. So this 9/11 video, real quick, the synchronicity world. My daughter knows that I've questioned these things my entire life, and she found it on her own, by the way. That's me, by the way. She found it on her own and actually sent it to me as a Facebook message, and it was kind of like everything coming full circle. Dad, have you seen this? And it was so cute, and I was like, yes, I have. But the idea that I knew who you were, I had seen your video, but lo and behold, it landed in my daughter's lap, and she sent it all the way back to me. But last time, at least 2 million views. How many views has it gotten?
On my channel, it's got almost 1.8, and then it's been copied on so many other channels, and it's also on my website for a direct download. It's all over the web now, so who knows? It's something over 2 million at this point anyway.
It's almost because Peter Joseph kind of broke it down in Zeitgeist to about 40 minutes. And I think you divided that by eight and got it all the way down to 5 minutes. And I'll find it and post it tonight, by the way, and I will tweet it. But hey, listen, you are on the island of Japan. How long have you lived there, by the way?
This is my ninth year. We're going into ninth year now. So quite a long time now.
And you decided to move there. You were assigned. Work took you there. Relationship. Why? How did you end up there?
It was really just kind of something that I was doing as a young man to postpone adulthood for another year. I thought, well, what can I do? I don't necessarily want to start my career yet. Oh, I know. I'll go teach English in Asia for a year. I haven't been to Asia. It's a good excuse to go out there, earn some money, and see a bit of the world. So I came out here pretty much on a whim and without any particular knowledge or interest in Japan per se. So I just thought I was going to stay here a year. And now here I am 9 years later. I guess I ended up liking it.
I was just going to say, did you fall in love with the culture, the people? I've seen The Last Samurai and the charm of a spiritual inner nature and a history, obviously, of a people that goes back millennia. You know, there's a lot on that island. What was the charm?
It's a good question. I think just for my own personality, I kind of fit in to the culture here. It's kind of a reserved introvert type culture, and I'm kind of an introverted person in a lot of ways, so it kind of felt comfortable for me.
I'm gonna get you drunk.
I don't drink anymore. So
that's all right. We'll come visit you. We'll do some sake or something. Okay, James.
Oh, okay. You come here.
All right. Hey, listen. Now let's get serious. Everyone's seen pictures of the tidal waves that came off that earthquake. Unbelievable devastation. People literally vacationing and, you know, much like in the Philippines with their tsunami. There's more than just Fukushima, but I want to get to Fukushima. But first, tell me what it's been like to be on that island since that tragedy.
It's been very strange, but not in the way people might expect. In fact, quite the opposite. People might think that this has deeply affected the nation and everyone's talking about it. I think it has deeply affected the nation, but the interesting thing is the way that people don't really talk about this. They don't bring it up in conversation. And if I hadn't have been following the news, I wouldn't have known from any of my conversations with any of my Japanese friends that anything was happening. I don't know if it's just the natural Japanese reserve or the unwillingness to talk about these types of things in mixed company or whatever it is, but people, certainly at least on this side of the island, are not talking about it in their day-to-day conversation.
You're on the west side, correct? You're on the opposite side.
400 miles southwest of Fukushima. So the only thing I knew about the earthquake was when I saw it on the news. I didn't feel anything. So the other side of the country, and a lot of people are just kind of going along and pretending that nothing's really changed, at least over here. And that's kind of the weird thing for me, the disconnect between the extent of what happened and then people here, and you don't really see a lot of it on the day-to-day basis.
Is that the media silencing the story, or is that the internalization of the people and that's how they treat anything?
I think to a large extent that is just the Japanese culture at this point. And this is a people that have been under imperial conditioning for so long that it's quite disturbing in a lot of ways to see how easily media propaganda can filter down to the people. And if the media tells people everything's okay, they will go along with it. Even if they don't believe it, that most people won't kind of rock that boat in normal conversation with people. So they have the two sides of the personality that they talk about here in Japan, tatemae and honmae, and basically it's the face that you show the world versus the face that you have, you know, when you're at home by yourself or with your family. And I think there's a lot of that kind of almost like a British stiff upper lip kind of thing, you know,
sure.
Just get on with it and keep on and don't rock the boat.
That's James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. Pardon the pun, but Fukushima takes place. Basically, that wave gets high enough to take out their generators. They lose the grid power. They can't keep their pumps running. Reactors start to overheat. And then we start getting two stories. Actually, probably more like three or four. We get the official story. I remember watching the first video of the first containment building literally almost disintegrate and watching the shock wave travel up through the atmosphere and thinking to myself, that can't be good. And, you know, sure enough, and even the HBO show, I can't remember, what was the HBO show that it was about the news? It was in the newsroom, and they actually covered Fukushima. It was something that there was the official story from the power, you know, the power provider. What's the name of the power provider? Remind my...
TEPCO,
which stands for what now?
Tokyo Electric Power Company.
Okay, and they kept releasing, oh, don't worry, this is not bad, and, you know, and on a scale of 1, 2, 4, or 5, I'm going to let you tell more of the story here, but I kept looking and saying, you know, oh, then I see another explosion, then I see another explosion, and I'm like, this is a nuclear power facility. Those are reactor buildings or at least containment vessels or the opposite. They store spent fuel rods all over the place. It could be raining, you know, unbelievable high amounts of pure, I mean, just death, not just on land, but, you know, maybe a mile or two out into the water. This stuff could be sitting there. And meanwhile, we're getting the old nothing to see here. Move along. And you didn't know any of this. Did any of this, and that's why I said, pardon the pun, did any of this leak to you on the internet? And I need two answers here. A, how did you find out about it? And B, knowing you weren't exactly, you know, 10,000 miles away from this, this had to freak you out a little.
Well, the weird thing is at the time that Fukushima started, I actually was thousands of miles away. The day of the earthquake was the day before I was heading back to Canada for a 1 week trip. I was going back for my mother's funeral, actually, of all things.
Good timing on your part.
The day after the earthquake happened, I flew out of Japan to Canada. And so I was in Canada and obviously distracted with other things during that week. And I kind of saw on the news some of the headlines and what was going on, but I didn't really know about it in detail. And then I came back to Japan and sort of got caught up on everything that was going on. And it was just horrific, obviously. So during the time that this was all unfolding, I wasn't really plugged into the news. So I didn't know what was happening. But absolutely, what has become clear over the last couple of years is that from the very beginning, this was a cover-up of what took place and how much they knew. And we know that, I mean, from the most basic detail, the reactors 1, 2, and 3 all melted down, full meltdowns, which they knew about within days at least, if not hours. But they somehow didn't manage to let that information out for almost 3 months, which is just one extent of the incredible cover-up that's been going on at Fukushima since day one. So people who are skeptical of everything that TEPCO and the government says, I can certainly understand why.
I remember them talking about pumping seawater in, and basically, once you get that into your system, you're basically sacrificing the entire plant. You're so worried about, you know, a level 5 reactor meltdown or whatever they're called, that you have now sanctioned the complete rotting of every generator and anything that even deals with that sea salt and contaminants and everything else. And when I remember hearing about that, I was like, this is not good. But when you're there, was the information coming, like, you know, down the hallway, people were talking, or was the internet your source for when you started to, you know, a month here, a month there later, you start saying, wow, things aren't good over there. And now did you find out more simply from being on the internet?
Right. For me, it certainly was the internet, but I also have the language barrier. I have kind of conversational Japanese, but reading a newspaper is extremely difficult for me. So I was getting a lot of my news from the English language internet anyway. But in terms of conversations with Japanese people here, I was really shocked by how little conversation there was about this. At that time, it was still being covered quite a bit in the media, but no one was really talking about it. And there weren't a lot of conversations or gossip or whispers down the hallway kind of thing. It was just finding it online a lot of Japanese people reading the newspaper, watching it on TV.
We are Bubba Army Radio, of course. So, Rick, I would recommend that he gets a very hot Japanese interpreter.
Oh, yeah, there's got to be tons of those around there.
You know? I have my wife, but...
So did you marry a Japanese lady by any chance?
I did indeed. In fact, yes, we're expecting our first child shortly.
All right.
Congratulations.
James Corbett, yeah, making babies. I like that, James. That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome.
How'd you meet her?
Well, actually, I was studying Japanese. She was studying English, and their eyes met.
Bam.
That's out of some kind of novel or something right there.
That is.
Maybe it'll be that my is. Autobiography.
That's awesome. Absolutely. Well, congratulations. It's good to know a little bit of your private side. Hey, let's circle it on back. I think we only get about 15 more minutes, and I really want, though you've done so much stuff, and James, I hope you have a good time on our show, because we'd love to have you as, you know, maybe on every other month as a contributor. And I want you to be able to talk about your partner that you do another show with, and I want to leave enough time for that. But I was absolutely impressed, not only with Cynthia McKinney, since she grilled Rumsfeld about 9/11, you know, back when she actually was part of our government. But I was very impressed with her presentation. But let me tell you, when I watched your presentation, and we'll let you talk about it for a couple of seconds here, it was really about just the regular things we were told about Rumsfeld and Cheney that day, and the testimony of Norman Mineta, and some other things that can easily connect the dots that these people literally, I don't know what you said they could be prosecuted for, but other than maybe treason. And you simply did it with the facts that we knew about that day. So let's go back in time to who asked you to do this. I'm sure it was a wonderful pat on the back. I know it would be if I were you to have someone trust you with that presentation. What was the feedback like? Is the 9/11 truth movement still moving through the world, even though here it's kind of vilified? I kind of want to pick your brain a little bit, but take me to who asked you to do this, and what it was like to do that presentation.
Well, this was put together by a group called the Perdana Global Peace Foundation, which is connected to the Kuala Lumpur Foundation to Criminalize War, which holds war crimes tribunals. And people might have heard last year they convicted Bush and Cheney et al. Of torture, etc. So this is a group that's been around for a few years now and has been doing some very interesting work trying to draw attention to some of these issues. And one of the people who are on that war crimes commission is Michelle Chosadovsky of Global Research. And I also do video reports for globalresearch.ca. So I believe it was his recommendation that got me the invite out there to Kuala Lumpur. And I think the most exciting thing about this, the most interesting thing, is that it was, again, not just presenting in front of the former prime minister of Malaysia, a former head of state, and some very high-ranking ex-UN officials, etc., were there. I mean, just some really, really interesting people to be reaching out to and starting to lay some groundwork, hopefully, for moving forward with this. But also the ideas and suggestions that the panel had for how we can move forward with this and starting an independent commission and or referring this to an international court and or starting some sort of process in the United States itself through people like Cynthia McKinney. So a lot of ideas about how we can proceed forward. And so we're going to be looking at that hopefully this year and moving forward with that. But again, a very interesting time to present this information to people who have heard some of this information. But it was good to get some of the facts out on the table and get people really questioning this in a detailed way.
It's got to be, you know, I've talked to Richard Gage and, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that have invested a lot of time into not, you know, and I always look at them and I kind of go like, you know, what if you don't get your independent investigation? What if your goal, what if what you thought your goal was to get that, but you ended up waking up 10 million people? What if that was the reason you did things? And I got to ask you, what if we never get an independent investigation? What if it's turned into 50 years later and finally, you know, John F. Kennedy's nephew speaks out 50 years later. What if the things like 9/11 will just be stretched out forever and ever and we don't get it? Should that deter us from what we're doing?
Well, obviously the first and foremost thing that we have to be trying for, at least in this window of opportunity where it still is at least a theoretical possibility, we have to be trying for justice for the people who died that day and the people who have died in the name of 9/11. But you are right. It's certainly a possibility that it will never come to that. And obviously, barring some kind of major shakeup in international relations, it's just almost unfathomable how someone like a Bush or a Cheney or anyone connected with that administration or the power centers could really be brought before some kind of court and really put in shackles. It's almost impossible to imagine that from where we are as a society right now. But as you say, I mean, if in the process of at least raising these issues, you can wake up tens of millions of people, that has to be seen as some sort of victory. And I think the important thing here is that false flag terrorism is a type of magic trick. And just like any magic trick, if you can tell the audience exactly how the magic trick was done, then that magic trick won't work again in the future. And that has to be at least as important as the idea of getting justice for what happened in the past is the idea of preventing what could happen in the future. And I think we're starting to see that inflection point where people are not going to believe what is being told to them with so little evidence anymore. I think there has been a real fundamental shift in people's consciousness, and we're starting to have that effect. We're telling people how the magic trick is done, and fewer people are believing the magician when he tells them it's all magic. So that's some sort of victory, and I don't think we should downplay the importance of that.
I think, you know, you and I are playing a role, but when the Judge Napolitano does a 5-minute piece on the FBI creating 17 out of the 20 last terror events and uses the actual phrase false flag, and it becomes, it gets in that repetition, that repeater, if you will, of what used to only be owned by the Hannitys and the Becks and the Limbaughs, and there's a new echo cycle in the media. And it's being created by people like you and me and obviously someone like Alex Jones. And there's a lot of different names. And it's not about who you're doing, or it's about why you're doing it. So I want to get to the show you do real quick. I can't remember your partner's name. I know he has his own independent broadcast. You guys usually cover two or three topics because you are a busy guy. I mean, you produce independent stuff. You're doing stuff for other people's websites. And you also put this another show together. What is that show called?
That is New World Next Week. That's actually available at newworldnextweek.com, but it's also from my website and my YouTube. And I do that every week with James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And as you say, every week we go over three news stories that are making headlines around the world, and usually about a 15-minute conversation on those stories. And we've been doing that for over 3 years now. I can hardly believe that, but yeah, it's over 3 years old.
You did a story, and I want to talk about this a little bit because I want to play a little devil's advocate with you, because I understand that the more you were talking about EMP, electromagnetic pulse, which would be, if you've seen the movie Revolution or the TV show Revolution, it would basically make every piece of electronics fry itself, including the electric grid and everything else. So your phones wouldn't work, car ignition wouldn't work, generators wouldn't work. You would literally go back a couple hundred years and not have electricity. You know, knocking out the banking, the computers, you know, basically resetting to zero. And this could be a false flag, as in used against the United States of America by some nefarious group. And, you know, it's been on, you know, the Discovery Channel, and they've shown, oh, what if an EMP was set off? And, you know, in the what if scenario. But that is also a mental conditioning of people afraid of something. And, you know, you used it as an example of, could this be a future false flag? Because we've been hearing a lot about it, and you cited several reasons, and you know, even went to a Jack Blood show, and they were talking about the EMP. And I got to play devil's advocate with you a little bit. I just want to go back and forth here. Is, would that not completely re-rack their own power structure as well? And how would they hope to regain power? You know, I would see, you know, 10 different states setting up their own fuel and their own fuel and their own food and saying, screw the government. If you come back begging, we're going to chase you away with our guns right now. If they were to do a false flag that big, would they do themselves in? What do you think of that theory?
No, I think that's exactly right. And in fact, at the very, very end of the episode, I added a couple of caveats. One was to say that if we're talking about the nationwide kind of EMP event that they're hyping right now and they're trying to get people afraid of, that would be more like an endgame type scenario where basically, you know, it goes back to every man for himself, and they're just trying to round people up and put them in camps or whatever. But even that would be pretty difficult given the fact that technology wouldn't be working. So I also posited that we could see some sort of smaller scale EMP that might be in a smaller area, and whether that would come from the nuke, which just for whatever reason didn't detonate it high enough in the altitude to actually get knock out the nation. Maybe it's just a part of the nation, or some other type of device. You know, there are different devices that they're working on, technologies to try to do EMP. So they could try to say, oh, you know, those North Koreans just weren't technologically sophisticated enough to get the whole nation. They only got, you know, the Pacific Northwest or whatever it is, and use that as the fear-mongering excuse. So I did say that at the end of the episode. I do agree that it, to a certain extent, I think what they're trying to do right now, especially with the uptick in talk about this, is just to ramp up the fear, because of course there's a lot of defense contracts, etc., that ride on this type of fear mongering. So I think that's at least part of it, but I'm just positing maybe it's a vector for a false flag, at least on a smaller scale than what they're talking about.
James Corbett, Corbett Report, joining us. James, we got to talk a little Second Amendment. Alex Jones has gone viral. More and more people know who he is. I'm a radio guy, and to me, it's a little bit of genius. Our last guest, Popeye from Federal Jack, cited complete psyop where they wanted to set up a gun guy as a crazy. Pierce Morgan sat there, act all calm. So if you're a questioner and you already know who Alex is, you like, well, I wouldn't have done it that way. That's what I hear a lot. But more and more people are going to Google him. More and more people are going to find out about a movie called The Obama Deception, or something you just used, Endgame. I don't see it as a bad thing, because even the shock effect of the wacko gun guy will wear off in a couple of months. And how many more million people will Google the name or go to Infowars.com or somehow stumble upon your video or our broadcast? I don't really see it as a bad thing. But the Second Amendment is in full effect here in our country right now. I'm sure you're well aware of that. Give me your take on the last 6 months from Aurora pretty much to present day. It's really been ratcheted up, hasn't it?
It certainly has. And I think that the media is a huge part in this. And I think they've played a huge part in ratcheting up this conversation and making it into the crisis scenario by which they can, of course, bring in their draconian legislation that they want, or at least attempt to. So I think that there's a lot to be answered to, but I think you're exactly right. I mean, in the wake of that Alex Jones interview, I tweeted it out to my followers saying the best 15 minutes in CNN's history. And I wasn't saying that. I was not saying that ironically or making fun of it. I truly think, I mean, that was an entertaining 15 minutes of television, even if you don't care about what they're talking about, it was entertaining, let alone...
There's no way you would change the channel in the middle
exactly,
of that rant.
Exactly, right.
No way. No way.
Fixated on it. And of course, that's not going to change a lot of minds. Anyone who is, you know, firmly one side or another is not going to change their mind because of an interview like that. But it certainly opened the debate up a lot wider than it was. And people can sit there and say, and be the internet quarterbacks and say, oh, he shouldn't have done that. He should have spoken this way. And we've seen other people do that with Piers Morgan, and they get maybe a few hundred thousand hits or something like that. And, you know, some people talk about it. But this got millions and millions and millions of hit, generated headlines all over the internet, got people talking about it in a way they wouldn't have otherwise. And I think you're right, and I think maybe you understand this from the media perspective. It gets the name out there, and in the future, that will get his name recognition out there at any rate, and certainly more people will be looking into that information in the long run. So I honestly, I think it is a win in the long run, even if it's nothing like what I would have looked like if I was on that show. But again, I'm not here to pick on the way other people present this information.
I've seen a lot of polite people be bullied by bully talk show hosts, and you know, I come from the media perspective. Is there's no way I'm going to go in there, A, not have my homework. Alex had his own notes. You know, the monkey dancing on the head of a pin, I could have done without that part.
I still think it's a good line.
I know. Yeah, but I was like, okay, you lost me there, Alex. Come on, reel me back in, man. Reel me back in.
There are no middle sharks in the water. That was also
Yeah, that was a good one too. But you know what? No such thing as bad publicity unless you know, you're... you know, injuring children, animals. If you're Michael Vick, if you're a pedophile, when there's certainly bad publicity. But Alex Jones has never backed down from who he is. He's never apologized for his personality. I've heard the man cry on the air. I've heard the man laugh on the air. I've heard the man go into spiritual rants and talk about how much he loves his creator and his own version. I've heard almost every aspect of that man. And you know what? That was anger. There's nothing wrong with anger. Anger is not a bad thing. And in our country, we talk a lot about psychotropics on this show and how they've created this foggy America, this idea that being mad or angry about the way things are going is somehow wrong and you need to have it 72 degrees inside your head all the time. And I disagree. Life is about passion. Life is about mood swings. Life is about being angry. Angry is okay. Okay. Don't bury your anger because, well, then it gets a little blown out of proportion and, you know, you're not just an angry person. You could be someone who could do damage or physically injure another person. Anger is a normal emotion. So when I see Alex Jones get angry, I kind of giggle a little bit and I go, that a boy. Because you know what? We are a nation. You know what the zombie apocalypse is, James? It's a bunch of people on psychotropics. That's what's going on.
Unfortunately so. And as you point out, I mean, I think there are socially acceptable ways to show that kind of anger and passion.
Sure.
Like sports or, you know, those types of things. But if you show it about something that really matters at the end of the day to our fundamental liberties, then you're crazy and you need to be locked up or whatever people have been saying. So that to me is one of the scariest parts of the reaction to that interview is the way that people are trying to say that, well, you shouldn't have those types of emotions or responses. Well, sorry, that is human nature and it's better for them to be put into something useful like these types of fundamental liberties and things along those lines than you know, cheering on a sports team.
There are different presentations. There are lots of people that have been doing it for a long, long time. And Gary Franchi is slowly building his own television network. I love his graphics. I enjoy his broadcast. And you are now producing your stuff and he's now carrying your stuff. So tell us about the relationship you have and where people can find that over what Gary's doing.
That's right. I had Gary on my program a couple of years ago. And so he got in touch with me recently for the Next News Network that he's working on now, nextnewsnetwork.com. And basically, yeah, they've launched their own news network and they are currently raising funds for it, etc. So I hope people will check it out. And yes, he's added some of my videos to that mix. And I'm also joining him on WHBT to do some interviews on a regular basis now. So absolutely. Gary Franchi, of course, is carrying on the legacy of Aaron Russo. He was kind of the appointed successor for Aaron Russo's work. So I hope people are familiar with him. And if not, they should get familiar.
Yeah, he does a great presentation. And now we get to the sappy stuff, bro. Why? What is it about your personality that is making you willing to put your face, your name, your personality out into the public persona and question the matrix. What is your driving force? What made you do it? You know, you had your red pill moment that woke you up, but what made you decide to speak out?
Yeah, it's a good question, and one that isn't asked a lot, so I don't get a lot of opportunities to self-psychoanalyze. I would say there's, I mean, to a certain extent, maybe it's just my personality in terms of I've always been one to sort of question authority and question what's going on and to be a little bit of an opposition to whatever's, you know, trending at the moment. I've always had that sort of desire, but to another extent, when it came to this type of information specifically, I noticed when I started my website, I had a lot of friends who pretended not to care about these issues, but at the end of the day, they'd always ask me, well, aren't you afraid you'll be put on some kind of list? And to me, that was the exact point. I don't want to live in a society where I have to worry about being put on a list because I speak out and criticize what's happening politically. And that's exactly why I started the website. So absolutely, put me on that list if that's what it takes. But people who will know about this and understand the problem and not speak up about it, I don't understand that personality.
We actually always acknowledge that the NSA guys, don't we acknowledge that the NSA listens to our show on a nightly basis?
We got to give them a name at some point.
Well, we picture, this is how we picture, James. There's a guy who, you know, they all have their cubicles, they all have their boring ass jobs, and they all sit there and they're like, and it's like drawing straws. They're like, who'd you get this week? Oh, I got to listen to some preacher in Alaska. Oh, I got Dangerous Conversation, dude. We get to rock out for 15 hours with these guys. James, you know your broadcast and podcast are being recorded. You know, you report on SOPA and FIFA and PIPA and every other four-letter word, if you will. You know, what do you think about the idea that, you know, you are known by the system. You are on the list. You know you're on the list.
Even if I was to be the good boy that just sits down and plays fair and doesn't say anything bad about the government, I would still be on those lists, and I'd be naive to think otherwise, because before I even started the website, as I revealed recently on my show, I was stopped at the airport in Vancouver once on my way home for a trip back to Canada. And they went through all my stuff. They went through even my cell phone, looking at the pictures of people on my cell phone. Who is this? Oh, it's my friend. Well, why don't you have so many pictures? And it's, oh, it's a new cell phone. Those types of questions. And they also took out my diary and went and took a photocopy of it. So absolutely, that was one of the things that I think prepared the ground for me mentally when I started encountering this information. Because I know that there is ridiculous government tyranny going on right now. The kind of things that would have made people in generations past absolutely, well, they'd be spinning in their grave, I guess, to see what's happening in our society right now. And that was before I even started the website. So I'm sure there's still a copy of my diary in some dusty recess of the Canadian government somewhere. So I think absolutely, if we just sit down and take it, it's going to come for us sooner or later. And the later that we postpone it, the worse it'll be when it arrives. So we might as well be the ones to stand up and to show other people that, you know, they can take out people individually, but they can't take out all of us. And if everyone who knew what was going on and cared about it stood up, there's no way they'd be able to handle that.
Hey, Rick, well, I'm going to start a diary right now. You want to take write it down for me?
I'm on it.
Okay, you got it?
Yep.
So let me know when you got a pen going.
Good to go.
This would be diary entry number one from Ledge. Dear NSA, fuck you.
Hold on, what was that last part?
That would be, fuck you, dear NSA. Yeah. Just, love, Ledge. Put that there. That's diary entry number one. You know, James, you can't kill an idea, okay? And liberty or freedom or the expansion of consciousness, the soul. I mean, there's a bazillion ways to talk about our potential, where we're supposed to be headed versus where we're being controlled or restricted. And you can't kill an idea. Gandhi said that, you know? You know, you can kill a messenger, but the message will always live on. And that's really, you know, I've always believed that I'm kind of a permanent piece of consciousness on the Scott ride, if you will. And right now, I've just been born into an amazingly, I mean, James, you have to admit, this is a very interesting time in the history of mankind.
Well, we are taught pretty much from the day that we're born, that we're nothing, we're useless, we're, you know, we need all these products in order to make our lives better, and that we should just consume wisely and then go and die at a convenient time, and that's all that we're here on this earth to do. And the truth, of course, as I'm sure many people know deep down in their bones, is that we are here to make a difference in this world, that we are history's actors, and that that there's absolutely nothing that can come between someone who's in the right standing up for what they know to be true and that truth. And that's the really the hidden truth that I think all of this type of tyranny is meant to try to distract us from, the fact that when we stand up, we can make a difference. So that's my message at the end of the day, and it's not about me and it's not about you, it's about all of us realizing that, and people individually just becoming motivated. If not now, when? And if not you, then who? So let's all of us use this technology that we have while we have it to spread this awareness and get other people in the game.
V for Vendetta. I remember the scene right at the end with the dominoes where he clicks one domino and that clicks two and those two click four and eventually you reach critical mass. And, you know, you've been doing this for 7 years. I like to stick my neck out there and say we're not quite at critical mass yet, but, you know, 10 million people viewed a video questioning Sandy Hook the other day, and there were several thousand people across the state in Florida and many states, you know, good old guys, Second Amendment gun owners that were out there protesting, speaking in public, saying, I'm a responsible citizen, I'm a family, you know, I'm a business owner, I'm a gun owner, stop vilifying us. I think they really awakened a sleeping giant by, you know, starting to squeeze on the Second Amendment. And I think they're pressing their luck and they're moving faster and faster. I'm not going to say we're at critical mass, but, you know, I was around in 2004 when very few people, you know, would even give me the time of day to speak out loud about Building 7. The world has changed. It is changing right in front of us. We're part of that change. And like you said, it's not about you. It's not about me. It's about truth. Truth is a game changer. It's the game changer. It always has been, whether it's on a personal level in your own world or you know, the awareness of people realizing how they're controlled, how they're owned, how they're operated. And, you know, I don't hold my breath. I've told my daughter this. All I want to do is be part of the process. I mean, if massive change happens while I'm still around, that will be quite a payoff. That, I'll be honest with you, that'd be quite a payoff. But I'm not holding my breath. This could be decades long. I don't know. I really don't, because it's kind of the Buddhist Taoist thing. Don't necessarily attach yourself to the result of what you're doing. Do it for the sake of doing it and look back and say, I left a legacy I want to leave behind. And I get that from you. I really do. That's why I dig your stuff. You're never preachy. You don't come across, you know, I mean, you have your own take. I think you qualify yourself as an anarchist. You know, I don't put myself in any box, because the moment you put yourself in a box, then they say, oh, that's Ledge. He's a libertarian or he's a constitutionalist. No, I'm not. I'm a goddamn human being. And that's how you know me. But, you know, anarchy is a dangerous word when you think of the Sex Pistols in a great song. But the idea that we don't need anybody controlling our worlds, we can really decide as a wonderful collective, a true republic, if you will, really deciding for ourselves, taking care of ourselves, being responsible for ourselves, and a little bit of give, a little bit of take, not a socialistic viewpoint, but a very balanced way of living. And, you know, that is the thought process that's going forward. I think I've been born into it. I don't really feel like I'm creating a huge ripple in the pond. And I'm sure, you know, you and I, maybe we never get to the level or the affecting, you know, the ripples in the pond like Alex is doing or something else. But when I go to bed at night, when I look in the mirror, when I drink a beer with my buddies, I'm happy at the person that I am. And I really do get that from you too. And I hope you really, I mean, you're a machine, dude. You're like Lee Camp, you know, he's like Lee Camp. Lee Camp does comedy. This guy does like 2 or 3 videos a week. He's on different shows. Rick, he really is dedicated to helping people search for truth.
Oh, I'm glad we had him on the phone.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure having you. Now you gotta let me know you had a good time on the show.
I had a good time on the show, so I hope we can do it again.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you back. We'll have Cynthia set something up with you. What is it, like 9, 10, and what is it, 10
it's
o'clock?
It's just past noon now.
Oh, noon. So it's noon in Japan right now.
I'm getting ready for lunch.
I know. We're getting ready to like
hit a... kind of awesome.
Yeah, we're going to go to a strip joint in about 45 minutes.
Almost the same thing.
All right. Hey, congratulations on your kid. I didn't even know you were married. So
congratulations.
You really got us up to speed. It's been a pleasure, James. I hope we speak very soon.
All right. Looking forward to it.
You got it, man.
Thanks,
absolutely,
Jeff.
Cool.